It's time for the Matt and Jeff Radio Hour from PopDose.com and Addicted to Vinyl. Now, here are your hosts, Matt Wardlaw and Jeff Giles.
All right, well, welcome to the Matt and Jeff Radio Hour, a periodic discussion of new music by older geezers that you'd think shouldn't have any. And I say older only because we haven't actually discussed any new bands yet. But I guess, Jeff Giles, it could happen.
You never know. You never know. Although, you know, this time around, I almost picked a different older band to talk to you about than the one that we ultimately ended up discussing because of the new album by The Outfield, another old band that we share a fondness for.
Yeah, which, have you heard it yet?
Yeah, I listened to it. I listened to it the other day because it's on Mog.
Oh,
yeah,
really?
I was just as surprised as you.
Well, I guess that goes with your ongoing Mog versus RDO argument because I got the record, and I, you know, that's kind of one of the tests that I always do to see how much the record is out there, like how much they've done their work. And I looked on RDO, and it wasn't there. I was like, oh, okay, maybe not.
I was surprised too because I think it's I don't think it's on Amazon MP3 yet either. I think it's just on iTunes at this point. But
that might be an Amazon MP3 thing, something we'll discuss a little bit more in a bit. But
it is kind of
surprising because like that Outfield record, like they just kind of put it out there. So the fact that they already have it on any digital service like a Mog, aside from being you know on sale, is pretty impressive. So obviously they've done
pretty
their homework.
Pretty hip for dinosaurs.
Yeah. So but I guess the pint-sized endorsement is, and I was talking with this with a friend. I was talking about this with a friend over the weekend, and I really wanted to let him get his listen into it before I offered any sort of commentary on it. But after he listened to it, he mentioned the exact same album to me that I had in mind, which is, I think this is really their best album that they've recorded since Voices of Babylon, and it kind of has that sound.
Well, I feel a little silly getting this in depth in a discussion of The Outfield, but the new one is it marks the return of the original drummer, and I think the last time he played with them was Voices of Babylon, right? Didn't he leave after that record?
Yeah, I think you're right on that. I think if anybody wants to take us to task for being wrong about that, go ahead.
Please.
Go ahead. Other people will make fun of you in the comments. It'll probably actually distract people from making fun of us for discussing The Outfield this in depth.
I enjoyed it. I mean, like, I don't know. I find it hard to believe that we live in a world where there are probably hardcore Outfield fans just because I don't think their music is really all that exciting, but I don't hate it either. I mean, it's enjoyable stuff. I had a copy of Rock Eye.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I mean, Closer to Me.
Yeah.
That was a great tune. Great, great tune. So, I don't know, man. I might be a hardcore Outfield fan because I do own every Outfield release, including the harder-to-find indie releases.
I do, too. I just, they're not a band that I've ever really gotten excited about, but they're just... I don't know. They're just kind of a solid B-level stadium rock band for a world where stadium rock bands can't fill stadiums anymore.
Yeah, and I saw them live about 10 years ago, and they were surprisingly still dead on. I mean, part of that is Tony Lewis still has the vocal capabilities, which you can certainly hear on this new record. Like, he hasn't lost a step, and if he has lost a step, they're doing some trickery in the studio. But I mean, when I saw them the last time I saw them, I mean, he was very solid.
I can't believe they toured the States 10 years
ago. I think it's probably legit. Yeah, and that was during a period where they hadn't toured the States in a while. But after they had gotten back together, they were touring pretty consistently for, I guess, 4 or 5 years at least. Prior to John unfortunately getting sick with a form of cancer, which is something that he's kind of been battling off and on while they've been working on this new record. And I believe, unfortunately, as they were wrapping this up, he'd been in remission. I think as they were wrapping this up, I think, unfortunately, he's had a reoccurrence that he's currently dealing with. So, but yeah, I hope that they'll get back out there and promote this new record, because I don't know how much the return of the original drummer, Alan Jackman, we'll just go ahead and give him a name. I don't know how much that really had to do with the quality of the songs on this record, but certainly the drumming lines up on this record. And for the first time since they've been back, the production quality is right in line with their old stuff. I mean, it really sounds great.
Yeah, I suspect it probably didn't have much to do with the songwriting at all, but there's just something about when certain groups of musicians get together and, you know, the real outfield sound is all about the vocals and the guitars, but the last few things they've done have been sort of uninspired, and the I think Jackman's return just added a little bit of a something to it. So if you are interested in new music from the outfield in 2011, the new record's not a bad place to start.
There you go. There is our endorsement of sorts. Well, this is episode 3 of the podcast, which inevitably people right now are scratching their head wondering whatever happened to episode 2. We recorded an entire podcast about Chicago's Live in 75, which just came out on Rhino Handmade, and we had former Chicago guitarist Dwayne Bailey with us to talk about it, giving his unique perspective as somebody that was a member of Chicago for a number of years. And regrettably, Dwayne's audio came out sounding pretty awful, so I've kind of had it on the shelf up to this point. But you kind of suggested this, and as I think about it, if you think about Charlie Brown and the Peanuts TV specials, you could never understand the teacher in their classroom. So with that in mind, maybe we should just post the audio.
I haven't heard what you heard. Wow. Does he really sound like a teacher on Charlie Brown?
I think that people would just really have to focus intently to listen to his parts of the conversation. And I'm just not sure that that's our audience.
Well, that's too bad. It was great having Dwayne talk to us about the record, and it's been a few weeks now. I don't really remember anything anybody said, but I'm sure it was a fine show.
It was a fine lengthy discussion, and I so I'll dig that out and see if we can salvage that in some form, because it's a release that certainly is worth discussing. We had some fun discussing it, so we'll see if we can make something happen with that. But one of the things that I was really excited about was the fact that for the second podcast in a row, we were discussing a release that was not available in Canada.
Tormenting our friend Terry again.
Oh, absolutely, man. And so I'm happy to report that this week's discussion once again features an album that I believe is at least partially unavailable in Canada, because there are exclusive bonus track downloads that I don't think are available for outside territories.
Is that so? Here I was.
So I could be wrong about that.
I was impressed because I think this is the first time I've seen Frontiers Records do a day and date worldwide release. Usually their stuff comes out in Europe months before it comes out here, but I think it dropped the same day everywhere this time.
That's a good point. And I think part of that is that they've really been stepping up their U.S. presence. And I think they have an office here in the U.S. now. And so, yeah, that was kind of a big step for them. I don't know if that's the first time that they've done that, but it certainly is an album that, from the stuff that they've been pushing, I think that I saw a lot of push and a lot of buildup for this release, with the exclusive track downloads being available at Amazon and iTunes, and just all the promotion that they did otherwise leading up to the album release. This actually felt like an album release, as opposed to maybe some stuff that they had done in the past that just felt like an import album from a band that just happened to be available in the U.S. Like, it felt like more of an event.
Did Frontiers put out the last one, or was that VH1 Classic?
In the States, VH1 Classic put out the last one. So, which, that's kind of surprising, because you would think that there'd be more hype tied in with that, because that was, you know, VH1 Classic, but really that record kind of came and went.
Right. It came and went through my ears, too.
So, and I guess as a, just to kind of double check ourselves, I'll throw in that obviously Frontiers is the record company that put out the new Journey record as well. But I believe, to your point, that it came out a day or so earlier in the UK, if not like a week earlier, before it hit shelves in the States and Walmart.
I didn't know Frontiers put out the new Journey. Wow, they really are stepping up. They've come a long way.
Yeah.
Just putting out like live Whitesnake records.
So today we are talking about the new record from Night Ranger, Somewhere in California. We're also going to just talk a little bit regarding their storied career, a legacy which has seen them getting soundtrack time in movies like The Secret of My Success and Boogie Nights. I figured you'd enjoy that storied career reference.
You.
And this summer, they're on the road with Foreigner and Journey, a package that really presents one of the larger collective collections of hits that I've seen hitting the road in a while.
Yeah, it's just too bad this didn't happen in, you know, 1985.
When you obviously at a point where you would have the original lineups intact for all three.
That's, I guess we might as well cut to the chase. That's my main problem with this record, which I don't dislike at all, but it's, to me, just not Night Ranger.
Really? And what makes it not Night Ranger?
Because the dude in the surgical scrubs is gone.
But have you seen pictures of the new keyboard player, Eric Levy? He kind of has that same mysterious, suspicious feel.
Well, there is
feel.
Something mysterious about the fact that there's a keyboard player in Night Ranger.
Because you look at that guy, and I think it's the same feeling that you got when you saw pictures of Fitz on the album cover. It was like, man, I don't know if I'd leave my wallet around that guy.
Night Ranger, I became aware of them for the first time when I was like 8 or 9. And Fitz used to just freak me out. Like, you see him in videos and you think, well, what is going on there? These other guys all seem like happy-go-lucky rock and rollers. Then there's this guy who's wearing scrubs for no apparent reason and hiding behind shades.
See, but I think for Fitz, he probably had a perfect reason.
What do you think his reason was?
I think that those are his comfortable clothes, and the band asked him if he could put on something a little bit more appropriate for the photo shoots and the video shoots, and Fitz probably just said no.
In all seriousness, the stuff that went down between Seven, the album that they put out in 1998, and the last one, Hole in the Sun, it just kind of left a bad taste in my mouth. I mean, I know that these bands face sort of dwindling returns on their concert tours, which is why you see these big packages now, so they could get more asses in the seats. And so they have to, you know, they've got divorces and they have kids to feed and college educations to pay for, and the profits continue to shrink. And so sometimes they end up tossing out these guys who are full members instead of just employees. But I thought that, the fact that they fired Jeff Watson with the last record and got rid of Fitz, I don't know. And then you saw, I don't even know who the hell is in the band anymore, but they've had quite a bit of turnover at the keyboard position and at the second guitar position.
Yeah, well, I think they've had the same guitar player since they parted ways with Jeff, because they have a guy named Joel Hoekstra, who comes to the band. He's actually had a pretty good rise since he came to the band.
Is it just the keyboard player that they keep turning
over? He came to the band, I think. Right. It's the keyboard player. Yeah, they've had several keyboard players. But I think Joel came to the band. I think Kelly came in contact with Joel when he was playing with Jim Peterick and that world stage thing that Jim does. But since Joel's come to Night Ranger, now he's also the lead guitarist for the Rock of Ages thing on Broadway. And he also was touring with Trans-Siberian Orchestra last year, so he's getting a pretty good profile. But yeah, they definitely went through several keyboard players, including at one point, and you know what, I'm going to have to correct myself in a second, because you're partially right on the guitar player thing. I'm sorry. They had Reb Beach from Winger for a moment, just long enough to like record that live record that they put out in Japan. And by the time they were out playing shows to support that Hole in the Sun record, they had gotten Joel, and now Joel's been with the band like 4 years or so.
At one point, it was Reb Beach and one of the guys from Great White in the band, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was. That's what I was going to say was, they had Michael Lardy on keyboards at one point.
So I don't know. That just
so what ahead. Is it? What is it about the loss of Jeff Watson that really changes things for you? Because to me, like, I mean, as far as that Night Ranger sound, like the dueling guitars and all that kind of stuff, that's still intact to my ears.
It is still intact. I guess for me, it's just, well, maybe this kind of ties back to the whole Alan Jackman thing with the outfield. I think there's something intangible. And it just, it takes it away for me. And plus, you and I have both interviewed members of this band. And they always come across as really down-to-earth, friendly, non-asshole guys who you wouldn't expect to do the kinds of things that Jeff Watson accused them of doing after he was let go. And I guess maybe that, coupled with the fact that I thought Hole in the Sun was a pretty crappy record, really kind of dampened my enthusiasm for Night Ranger. And then when the track listing was announced for the new album, the bonus tracks made me a little cautious about listening to the record. Because I don't think anybody ever asked for an 8-minute version of Coming of Age.
But, you know, if I would have known that there was the potential for that with 3 or 4 minutes of Stranglehold built into the middle of it, I absolutely would have asked for that. That's where you and I differ, my friend.
That's where we part ways. But all that being said, this is a pretty solid record.
It is, yeah. And as you mentioned, we both have talked to folks from Night Ranger in the past, and in the more recent past, I got to speak with Kelly Keegi about this new record. So I think we'll share some clips from that interview as we progress. And one of the first things that I talked to him about was they've talked a lot about how this record returns to the classic Night Ranger sound. And I had the chance to interview Kelly Keegi and ask him what that term means to the band.
Well, I mean, that's kind of like, you know, Don't Tell Me You Love Me, Sing Me Away, you know, like hard rock, pop choruses, you know, dual lead guitars, you know, I mean, I think that, and the vocals, you know, so those three elements, I think, is what we've developed in via classic Night Ranger's sound, you know, from the first three albums, you know, what we did is we tried to come up with catchy choruses, but at the same time say something interesting, if it was about a relationship or if it was about, you know, life in general. So, but the dual lead guitar, you know, the vocals, you know, that's basically the classic Night Ranger sound.
So that's basically his feedback on the classic Night Ranger sound, which I think I mean, it falls pretty closely in line with what you and I would associate with being the classic Night Ranger
sound.
Yeah,
and I've been thinking about, I think to me, this is a restatement of their original sound, but it doesn't sound self-conscious, and it certainly doesn't sound desperate the way some bands from that era have sounded when they've tried to return to, you know, the stuff that really made them famous. Why do you think it works?
I think I kind of had that same hesitation. First of all, when I heard them throwing around the term classic Night Ranger, like you, it's like, usually when you hear that, you get some songs that because of what they were going for, the actual songs suffer because they were writing very specifically and it's just like, and they just don't hit it. So that was really where I was happy, because when I heard the first single Growing Up in California, certainly it has that classic sound. And hearing that song, I was like, oh man, if they can come up with like 10 more songs like this is going to be a pretty enjoyable record to listen to. So, and I think that they did that. But what's interesting about the album for me is, again, kind of straying away from your opinion of things, and I think I was one of five people that were in this category, but I generally enjoyed the Hole in the Sun record, which the Night Ranger fan base in general really hated that record, which I think part of that is just because it had a harder edge. And one of the things that I heard a lot of people say was that it sounded more like a Kelly Keegi record, and it really didn't sound like a Night Ranger record.
I just don't think the songs are all that memorable. There are a couple tracks that I thought were good. But yeah, I don't know. I mean, they tried adopting a harder edge for some of the stuff on Seven, and I thought that worked pretty well. But just, I don't know, that whole record just kind of uninspired from the cover on down. It seemed like a band that was sort of adrift.
I think, I mean, my thing with that record was I just was surprised. I mean, I heard the record and I just was kind of thinking, where is Jack on this record? You know, did he use his quote unquote best stuff on his solo record? You know, where's his presence? Where's his presence on this record? And that's where it was kind of funny when you started looking at the co-writing credits on that record. I mean, he definitely was there in the co-writing credits, but it just was a very different sounding record for the band, and I think that that threw a lot of people. And that's what's kind of interesting about the initial single Growing Up in California is that I think that's kind of a different kind of lead vocal for Jack. I mean, if you weren't watching the video, you might almost think at the beginning of it that you're listening to Kelly sing it.
To me, the song is reminiscent of a track off of Seven. I don't know if you remember this song, Peace Sign.
Absolutely. Yeah, love that song.
It's just him kind of being autobiographical. I mean, lyrically, the song is kind of lame. And it's so specific to his personal experience that I think that it makes kind of a shitty single. But the chorus is huge. And it's deeply, identifiably Night Ranger. I mean, it, from a musical standpoint, if you want to announce right away, like, we have returned to the classic sound, then this is the best way to do it. So I said to myself, you got one life sitting on a shelf.
Gonna say, I think that that's one of the things when Jeff Watson left the band, I was worried that those trademark background vocals might suffer, but obviously all these years they must have just layered that stuff a lot, because that stuff doesn't, I mean, I've seen them live, I mean, it does not suffer at all.
I've been thinking about this and trying to determine why it is that Night Ranger can pull off their old sound even now that they're, what are they? They're probably in their 50s, right? And
yeah,
I think it's
yep.
because even in the 80s, they were never really part of the hair metal sound that was, like, they were never all about sex. You know, you listen to the guys in Motley Crue now and they just sound like herpes. But Night Ranger,
right.
even in their 20s, they were, this is going to sound kind of funny, but their songs were kind of reflective. You know, they were doing stuff like Sing Me Away. I mean, how old were they when they did Sing Me Away? They had to be in their early 20s. And that's a song about looking back.
Yep.
And, you know, it's almost like a Bob Seger song about how things were so much better in the old days. And that's the kind of thing that their audience can identify with now. So when they write new songs that are supposed to sound like their old songs, they're kind of just mining the same territory. You know, they're writing songs about how great it is to rock and have a fun time. And they're writing songs about old relationships. Did you notice the third song, Bye Bye Baby? Did that remind you of another Night Ranger song? Like, a lot?
That one didn't, but you tell me, what did
Don't
that remind you
I'm
of?
Don't start thinking I'm alone tonight.
Oh, okay. Now, see, that's not one of... I can't say that I've given that track
I
a ton of play.
Song.
Don't start thinking I'm alone tonight,
but
so I wouldn't have picked that up.
It's almost identical. You should go back and play them both side by side. That was one time where, like, I was listening to Bye Bye Baby and thinking, maybe they were trying a little too hard to recapture the old sound. My only other complaint with this record, aside from the bonus tracks, which I guess we'll get to, is that so many of these songs are just long.
Really? I didn't have that issue.
Follow Your Heart is almost 7 minutes long.
Of course, I like.
Time of Our Lives is 5:15.
Yeah.
Live for Today is more than 6 minutes. Say It With Love is over 5 minutes. I question whether or not that's the kind of thing that people are looking for in a Night Ranger record.
Yeah, I mean, I could see what you're saying there. I mean, I think that it fits the spirit of what they were going for with the song, but you know, to your point, you know, as to whether Night Ranger fans are looking for that, that's a good question. I mean, Follow Your Heart, that's kind of one of those songs that... if they placed that one a little bit further down in the track listing, I'd be okay with it. So, yeah, it goes a little bit long for me. But I really like Time of Our Lives. And so when there's a song like that that I really like, I generally don't have a problem if they extend that, as indicated by my recent endorsement of the nearly 8-minute recut on Coming of Age.
Maybe if we hadn't already had Night Ranger collections like the, what's it called? Hits Acoustic and Rarities. And maybe if we hadn't already had 15 years of labels like Cleopatra endlessly repackaging songs, then I wouldn't have such an issue with it. But, you know, the last few Night Ranger records have all had some kind of acoustic... reworking bonus track bullshit of usually it's You Can Still Rock in America. I just feel like they've gone to this well a few times already. And Coming of Age isn't even a Night Ranger song.
Yeah. I don't know. I was kind of okay with it because of what you just said, like as far as like continually getting those same kind of things repackaged as bonus tracks or just redone on releases or whatever. I was interested going, you know, wow, you know, AC/DC, I'm kind of interested to hear what they do with that. And I imagine that's gotta be Kelly singing that one. And so then to find out that, no, it's actually Jack that takes the lead vocal. It's like, wow, that's kind of interesting. And then, Coming of Age, I mean, that's one that they've done in their live show. So it didn't surprise me that they were, putting down their official version of it. You know, certainly finding out about the Stranglehold component was a little bit surprising. But here's a nugget of information that you'll appreciate. I had a friend that recently talked with James J.Y. Young of Styx, who revealed that for their upcoming, highly anticipated Regeneration Volume 2, they too have cut their
Jesus
own version
Christ.
Of Coming of Age.
You know, it isn't like this song is blowing in the wind. You know, how many versions of Coming of Age does the world really need?
Well, yeah, hey, man, somewhere out there, there was a Night Ranger fan going, what you got, babe, is what I need. Night Ranger heard that, and they are just giving the fans what they want.
Listen,
all right?
I speak as somebody.
I mean, come on. I mean, how many times have you sung that classic lyric to Jason's mom?
I loved that song. That came out when I was 16. That's a perfect song for a 16-year-old guy. And Michael Parr, our friend at Popdos, will tell you that we were together during the spring. I was with him and Jason and Rahul Gupta, another Popdos friend, and our wives.
Yeah.
And Jason and Michael brought their guitars. And at one point, Michael busted out with the opening lick, and my eyes lit up from across the room. I have no problem with that song. I don't know. It seems uninspired, like an uninspired, like a really predictable choice. And I get, you know, Dirty Deeds is not a bad song for them to cover, but I guess maybe because of the covers record, the awful, awful covers record that Blades did with Tommy Shaw. When I see Night Ranger, yeah, you liked it.
Which I liked.
Everything. When I see Night Ranger doing covers, maybe I get a little nervous.
You're sitting over there going, man, this just opens the door. It opens the door. You know what happens? You let them do a cover song as a bonus track, and next thing you know, they're doing a whole goddamn record.
Exactly.
And I don't know how you work over there. Coming of Age, though. Coming of Age, would you say that would be the last great set of Jack Blades lyrics? It's not a bash on Jack. It's just kind of speaking seriously, like he really strung together some great stuff for that song.
Hold on. I need to know what year Jack Blades was born. All right, so he was almost 50. Wait, no, that isn't right. He was almost 40 when they did that. When they did Coming of Age, so
right.
Let's see. I suck at math, but I think we're looking at a 36-year-old man singing about a teenage girl.
See, but Ted Nugent was almost 70, so seeing Ted Nugent in the video. Seeing Nugent in the video kind of offset any potential creepiness coming from Jack and Tommy.
Speaking of 70 years old, how about that house coat, that B. Arthur house coat that Ted Nugent wore in the video for High Enough? Oh, boy.
I'll tell you, I just was not incredibly familiar with Ted Nugent at that point when the Damn Yankees records came out. Like, I knew enough about Ted to know that I really, at that point in my music fan evolution, I didn't want to know a lot more about Ted. I knew the hits that he was associated with, Cat Scratch Fever and all that kind of stuff, and I was like, that's really not for me. And you know, so when I would see you know, Ted like step forward in the video with like the typical over the top bombastic guitar solo, really that was just taking away screen time from other more potentially awesome parts of the video. And it went on for a long time, so how long till we can just get back to the awesome parts of the video?
I agree with you. I'll never forget the sight of Ted in wraparound shades, chewing gum, soloing. I think the cops are shooting at him while he's doing it, too, aren't they?
Those were real cops.
Ted is like the George Wendt of classic rock. You know, like he's the kind of guy that he can be great in very small doses, but you would never want him to carry his own show.
And that's why I have not gone to see a Ted Nugent show, but I can certainly groove on 3 or 4 minutes of Stranglehold, because 3 or 4 minutes of Stranglehold, when you're not expecting it, you're going, oh, yeah, I'm down with this.
Yeah, I don't know. I just think they could have done... I would rather not have bonus tracks than have this.
Yeah? Sometimes that's the case. I mean, because... How often do you get, even when the bonus tracks are original songs, if you think about the records where bands have put out, like, say, 3 or 4 original songs as additional bonus tracks, those songs are very rarely killer, and most of the time you can see why they were left on the sidelines.
Are you going to go see this package tour?
Absolutely. It's much to the dismay of my girlfriend. It's a can't miss show in my
world.
Where
are they playing near you?
They're playing a shed here, a shed called Blossom Music Center. So I will trek out to check it out because it's a solid night. I mean, for anybody that hasn't seen the new version of Foreigner, Kelly Hansen, who's on the vocals, does a very nice job of things vocally. And I wouldn't have believed it till I heard it myself, and certainly after I saw it myself. I mean, I don't know that it still makes it right to endorse the fact that Mick Jones has got a band out there that he's the only original guy and he calls it Foreigner, but they present a very authentic experience, which in these days of replacement lead singers, that's kind of what it's about, is like, can we put together a package of musicians that can accurately deliver the songs and make people want to come see the band? And why that works with a band, well, I mean, I guess you're really talking two different levels, but, you know, why does that work with a band like Foreigner? And meanwhile, a band like Foghat does a credible job, but it's like, because it's not Lonesome Dave, average person probably doesn't want to go see Foghat.
Well, I would hazard a guess that all but the most fervent Foreigner fans don't have a clue about who was in Foreigner at the time, and they don't really care who's in Foreigner now. I mean, that was really kind of a anonymous era for rock and roll, like, you know, Toto, Foreigner, Chicago, Kansas, Boston, you know, all those bands have their irreplaceable components, but you could swap out you know, probably 80% of the members in those bands, and people wouldn't know or care.
Could you replace all the members in New Kids on the Block, and would Mike Heiliger from Poplar, would he still care?
I think Mike would care, yes. I think what we're seeing here is kind of like the who's a band from the Motown era that's out there kind of limping along with one or two original members? Four Tops doing it?
Yeah, but absolutely. But more so, yeah. I think the Temptations. I think they
so
have maybe
the
one original guy.
In classic rock. And
yeah. Well, you know, it's interesting because you said something very close to it. But when I talked to Jack Blades, I guess 10 years ago, after Journey had just made the replacement and brought in Steve Augeri, you know, Journey really wasn't out touring at that point. Like, they were just getting ready to hit the road, but they had played a couple shows, and Jack and Night Ranger had played one of those shows. So I asked him, I said, what was the reaction like to the new guy on stage with Journey? And he said, man, I got to tell you, he's like, they're playing, you know, Love and Touch and Squeezing, and, you know, the whole crowd's going, nah, 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 nah. And he's like, in the crowd, they didn't give a shit who was
on
stage.
At that point, it's not even really about the band. It's just about, you know, people don't go to those shows to see the band. People go to those shows to hear their youth. And I don't know.
Yeah. I've stopped going to those shows to hear my youth because I've realized that I will not find my youth.
You're smarter than the average bear.
It's gone.
I think Journey is an interest. They're kind of a different breed of classic rock cat in that they seem to still have a pretty fair-sized chip on their shoulders about you know, how their new music is received. They still seem to have goals. Whereas I think Mick Jones just, you know, he's got this Borg Foreigner that he's put together, and he knows that all he needs to do is get a couple of songs together that sound close enough to the old Foreigner to be able to sell a couple copies at the merch table. And to his credit, that last Foreigner record works.
Yeah, it absolutely does. I mean, you and I think we're both really shocked when that record came out, how much it sounded like not only a Foreigner record, but like a classic Foreigner record. Yeah, I mean, definitely the best record that they had made in a long time, probably going back to inside information.
See, I was a fan of Mr. Moonlight.
Okay. Yeah. I like moments on that record.
Do I actually like something that you don't?
That I think that's what just happened. Let's mark that down. Wow. Yeah. No, the Foreigner thing was interesting for me because before I saw them, I was really kind of against going to see a new band with just Mick Jones that he was calling Foreigner. And certainly with what had happened with Lou Gramm, I understood why Lou was not back out there. And that I think that's where I kind of was at that point, was that as much as Lou had the passion for wanting to get back out there and continue to do things because he genuinely loved the music, it really was painful as a Foreigner fan in those later years to watch those shows with
all
Lou.
All I know about him is that he had some kind of a tumor.
Yeah, he had a tumor that when he went through the process to get rid of it, it just kind of destroyed
and
his
now
voice.
Now he's making Christian rock, right?
It was very sudden because here suddenly you had a singer that when he had gotten back together with Mick in 93 and they did that reunion tour, like, I mean, he sounded better than he had sung live back in the heyday for the band. So it's like they really were a unit. And I think that if you saw those shows and if you heard those Foreigner records, I mean, he had a very unique signature voice that in a minute, you know, with the thing that happened with the tumor, it's like that signature voice was gone. So it was a big loss.
Yeah.
Although people that are not Foreigner fans would call it no loss at all.
I really wasn't much of a Foreigner fan, but I had to hand it to him with that last album. You know,
there were some good moments and the new tracks that were on that anthology that came prior to that. I mean, I liked Soul Doctor and With Heaven on Our Side and I guess Prisoner of Love. I mean, I thought that was an example to me of like three new tracks tacked on to something that I thought were really solid.
What's Johnny Edwards doing now?
I think he works somewhere in your town, one of the local establishments.
Is he touring with Brian Howe somewhere?
Oh, boy. That's a good one, man. Yeah, so I don't know. The Foreigner thing, kudos to those guys, because when I finally went to see them, they had sold out like over a two-year period. They had sold out like four club shows here in the Cleveland area. So finally I had to go and see, like, clearly if, like, you know, 1,500 to 2,000 people a shot are going out to see this band, they must not suck. So they really have he really assembled quite a lineup that at the time that I saw them also had Jason Bonham on drums and Jeff Pilson on bass. And right now there's some Led Zeppelin fans that want to punch me in the face for daring to almost say John Bonham. They're going, Jason Bonham is not John Bonham, no matter how much he wants to be. Oh, man. Imagine that.
A fate worse than death.
He would have looked at a song like Waiting for a Girl Like You, and he would have said, no, we're not doing that. I'm gonna stab you with this drumstick. Put it away, Mick.
So if Journey, Foreigner, and Night Ranger are touring together this summer, what does that leave Styx? What are those poor guys going to do?
They are touring right now with Yes.
Right. They can those guys can commiserate on about firing singers who had the gall to get sick.
Yeah, I think if you look, they might have T-shirts at the merchandise stands that say "F those guys," only not F.
Yeah.
It's expanded out. So yeah, I don't know. I guess that means a summer where Styx gets to work in more of the progressive stuff, like,
you know, what will be progressive for Styx is if
Crystal
they
Ball, and that almost feels like a good place to wrap this up. Let's wrap on a controversial note, and I'm just gonna warn you that Styx fans are kind of passionate, so I can feel the hate mail coming in already.
Styx. Progressive Styx.
So ultimately, somewhere in California, Night Ranger, you give it the thumbs up as far as worth picking up.
It's great music for driving in the car on a nice summer day, which I did yesterday.
Nice. And unfortunately, you did not drive into the river or into a wall, as the Styx fans are now wishing on you.
It reminds me of the many years that I was deeply into Night Ranger. You know, I was even a fan of their stuff like Man in Motion, you know, record that nobody bought. I've had a soft spot for those guys for a long time. And so this album was a really pleasant surprise, and I hope it's the start of a new little mini renaissance for them.
Yeah, I agree. It's very solid, and even though I like everything, this actually sounds like a Night Ranger record, and it really sounds like a Night Ranger record. So if folks dug Night Ranger records like Seven Wishes and Midnight Madness, I think this is not necessarily a carbon copy of either of those records, but it certainly fits the sound of some of the songs on those records pretty well.
I guess
well.
It bears mentioning that it isn't as distractingly synthy as those records. I think that a lot of those songs, they Fitz had to get his piece of the action. And, you know, like I listened to those early records this morning, and the keys don't always work, and here they're blended into the sound a little more organically.
But when the keys do work during the moments of like just synth heaven happening, when Jack Blades is just going, "Don't tell me you love me, don't tell me you love me," like when you have those synths just like alternating in the background, it's like that's heaven. It doesn't get any better than that. Thank you, Fitz.
I miss you, Fitz.
We all miss you, Fitz. Hopefully you're enjoying life somewhere, counting your Van Halen money, counting your Night Ranger money, and just...
I think Eddie Van Halen hires him to just be off stage at all times, doesn't he?
Yeah, I don't know if he's done that with
the
Rock tours,
house.
But certainly
if Eddie's
all
in the
Sammy
kitchen,
tours,
then Fitz has
there.
To be in the adjoining room. Always unseen, but just adding that extra little something.
At all times, you're going to be playing a piece of any one of these 12 songs. And just so you know, I really have a strong love for Love Walks In. So if you could play that a little bit more than the rest of them. Actually, Wolfie really likes that as well. So thank you, Fitz.
Eddie Van Halen might be crazy enough to do that.
I'm sorry, Fitz. We also should talk about one more thing. And that is that as soon as the construction guys get back out here, I'm actually going to take you from the breakfast nook where you are currently, and we're going to put you in the garage.
All right, man.
So, all right. Well, I think that wraps up this edition of the Matt and Jeff Radio Hour, a somewhat periodic discussion of music when we feel like it and when technology cooperates with us. So I think that there are records that are out and coming out and on the way that certainly we should discuss coming up in the near future. Like, for instance, I just got to ask, are you a Bengals fan?
I am a Bengals fan. Are they?
There we go.
That
might have potential
then. Some kind of a stupid vinyl single through some clothing store.
A woman's clothing store, I believe, which is why you and I don't have it.
Are they putting out a full length?
Excellent. They have a full length coming out in September. So produced by Matthew Sweet. So something to look forward to.
I'm sure we'll manage to get together before that happens.
Exactly. We will get it done. So thank you all for listening. And I guess good night, everybody. And for those that aren't going to have a good night, well, good night anyway.